A production of SDPB, South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
We will call the House of Representatives Health and Human Services Committee to order this morning. We'd like to greet our internet listeners as well as those of you that are here this morning in the audience for the Health and Human Services Committee. We'd like to remind everyone right up front to be sure you turn off your cell phones, turn off the or mute the sound on your computer, please. A reminder to those of you that are here to testify this morning to please sign in, and also to be sure that everyone has their badges. We will be sure that anyone that testifies does have the badge unless they're testifying only for themselves. We do have some introductions this morning, but there's our pages. We do have new pages starting this week. I believe Carmen, is that Carmen Alcock, who is from Britain, who is passing out handouts right now. And our other page is Caleb Anderson. Is Caleb here yet this morning? Okay, he's on errands, and we'll greet him when he returns. With that, I'll have the secretary call the roll.
Representatives Blake.
Here.
Boomgarden.
Here.
Curd. Dreyer.
Here.
Ironclad.
Here.
Jensen.
Here.
Lucas.
Here.
Mosier.
Here.
Nygaard.
Here.
Bromkema.
Here.
Vanderlinde.
Here.
Rave.
Here.
Pitts.
Here. We do have a quorum, so we will begin our meeting this morning. Before we begin with bills, we do have a handout at your desk as far as old business. Representative Vanderlinde, Mosier, and Jensen had questions of the Social Services Department, and Jackie Storm from LRC has received an email with those answers, and we have passed those around. Does everyone have their copy? And we will just leave it at that it is passed around. If there's any further questions, please check with me as chair or check with Social Services for the answers to those questions. Are there any questions from committee this morning as far as our procedures today? Good morning, Representative Rompkema. Welcome. Be sure with phones to have those off, please. With that... And you have a great teacher. Okay. Those of you that are testifying, if you do have handouts, we do have the pages to hand those out. And with that, we will start with House Bill 1041. Do we have any... Oh, excuse me. We have the minutes to approve. Do we have a motion for the minutes?
Second.
Moved by Representative Rave to... approve the minutes, and we had a second by Representative Dreyer. Any discussion on the minutes? This will be a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Minutes have been approved. Thank you for that reminder. With that, we will move into House Bill 1041. Do we have any proponents for House Bill 1041? Good morning. If you would introduce yourself for our internet listeners, and we may proceed with proponents.
Okay. Okay. My name is Margaret Hansen. I'm the executive director of the South Dakota Board of Medical and Osteopathic Examiners. It's a pleasure to be here today, Madam Chair and esteemed committee. I'd like to present House Bill 1041, which I have sent a bill brief, and those have been passed around with regards to that bill. This is an act entitled to provide physicians with limited permit to practice medicine within a residency program and to revise certain provisions regarding the Board of Examiners' authority to administer resident certificates and resident training permits. Briefly, this would provide for, as stated, the regulation of physicians within residency programs. Residency training begins after medical school, and these are physicians. They have the MD degree, but they're still in a residency program, and residencies can run between 3 to upwards of 5-6 years. So during that time, they're still overseen by supervising and attending physicians, and they are working in their residency program. Currently, there is a certificate for residents after that first year of residency, but there's nothing for the first year residents. And they have not in the past, all of them, gone through the Board of Medicine in order to practice medicine in the state. They see and treat patients. So we had a request of actually an out-of-state first-year resident that wanted to come in and, you know, came to the Board of Medicine, and we realized this, that there was nothing in statute to provide for those first-year residents. So that was where we started. Then, as if you look at the bill in front of you, 36-4-8, at present it reads that any person who practices medicine or osteopathy without a license is guilty of a Class 1 misdemeanor. And we've had the certificate has been in place for many years. So that was something that was missing from that particular statute. So we went through anywhere that there was the word certificate and made sure that everything matched and inserted it there. And we introduced the training permit, which would be eligible for those residents in their first year and beyond, actually. They could just stay with a training permit and renew that with the Board of Medicine on an annual basis. Additionally, in some of the minor changes to this bill, we're taking the word Board of Examiners was a defined in the title, and rather than having it sometimes Board of Examiners, sometimes Board of Medical and Osteopathic Examiner, we just went through and put in Board of Examiner all the way through to be consistent. And then we, of course, made it gender-friendly, so took out some of the terminology that wasn't that way. This would, again, allow physicians enrolled in postgraduate training programs to be held to the same scrutiny that other healthcare providers who are practicing in this state are held to. The Board of Examiners could conduct due diligence of those licensees. Currently, there are about 102 residents in the state of South Dakota, and only about 30 of those actually obtain a resident certificate. So that currently exists. That in a nutshell is what this bill is about. I'll take questions.
Ms. Hansen, actually, we will listen to other proponents, and then we'll open up the questions after proponents.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have other proponents for House Bill 1041?
Good morning. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dean Krogman, I represent South Dakota State Medical Association. The Board of Medical Examiners regulate the licenses of the physicians that we represent. And we rise in favor of this bill. The residency program, of which there are 6 in the state, 2 different locations, is very important to the recruitment of physicians in South Dakota. And, you know, that, as you know, has been an issue and will continue to be an issue in terms of serving the rural areas and so on. So we do support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Corcoran. Do we have other proponents of House Bill 1041? Further proponents for House Bill 1041? Do we have any opponents for House Bill 1041? Opponents for House Bill 1041? Well, then we will not need a rebuttal. So with that, we'll open it up to questions from the committee to our proponents for House Bill 1041. Representative Nygaard.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes. Question for Margaret Hanson, please. From the last person, we understand that there are six residency programs in the state of South Dakota. Are they all in the same field, or what are the fields of that residency program? And I think, Margaret, we have someone eager to answer the question for you right back here.
Okay.
And it relates to this bill. That's why I wanted to ask that. But
well, of the residents,
ma'am. Go ahead.
I guess we do have someone who could answer that very well.
Do we have a badge?
Go ahead. Let Margaret answer initially.
I'll do the very best that I can, knowing that the Dean of Medicine is sitting right behind me. So there are six residencies. The different specialties that they are training in are family medicine, psychiatry, pathology, internal medicine, child psychiatry. Lab medicine. Yeah.
Okay. And follow-up, Madam Chairman?
Yes, Representative Nygaard. And if Dean Perry would like to just answer the question, we can pull that forward.
Okay.
She answered it correctly. There are six, of course, of preference.
Yeah, that would be great if I could do the follow-up with the dean.
And, if you would introduce yourself for our internet listeners, thank you.
Good morning. Dean Rod Perry, Sanford School of Medicine.
Thank you. Madam Chair, for me. Dean, this bill, House Bill 1041, of course, provides for the regulation of physicians within these six residency programs and renews their certificate. Will this in some way help pave the way for enhancing and increasing the number of residency programs? Because it's my understanding that we lose some of our wonderful graduates from the University of South Dakota because of the fields they're in, there aren't residency programs in the state of South Dakota, and they end up going to other states with the thought of coming back to home and family and good old South Dakota. But, of course, forming new relationships, having children and doing things in other states that they end up not coming back, and it's a long question, isn't it? Go ahead.
And the answer is yes, sort of. This provides the structure for expanding the residencies. The residencies are very expensive and would require funding, so it's a two-part issue. But it will allow us, I think, to have better retention of the residents that train in the state because of the ease of getting a license following training.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Nygaard. Further committee questions for our proponents? Representative Mosier.
Just a very basic question. I suspect I know the answer, but on page 4, you strike within 15 days of the effective date of the summary suspension, and you add, which shall be promptly instituted and determined. And the purpose of that is for the benefit of the licensee to provide adequate time to prepare for the hearing. Is that accurate?
I'm very glad, permission to answer the question. I'm very glad that you brought that up. Yes, that what we're finding is, and I did pass out this additional handout to try and help explain that, so I'm glad that you asked the question. Currently, 36-429 speaks to this issue, and the statute says in compliance with Chapter 126, which is the Administrative Procedures Act. Then we have 36-4-29.1, which is the one that we are proposing to change. And in that, it says within 15 days of the effective date. We're finding that if there is someone who has to go to a summary hearing, 15 days, the board is prepared to to take on the case, but the licensee hasn't necessarily had a chance to prepare. And it conflicts because 36-4-29 says, in accordance with Chapter 1-26. So what I did there in the middle was I put in the Administrative Procedures Act, which is 1-26-29, which we're supposed to be doing it in compliance with, and the wording from that, the Administrative Procedures Act, which all administrative agencies follow, is these proceedings shall be promptly instituted and determined. So we're trying to bring those two statutes in line with each other and in line with all other administrative agencies. And ultimately, I do believe it's more fair, or we believe it is more fair for the licensee who has to defend themselves.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Further committee questions? Good morning, committee. Questions are all answered? Okay. Okay, then we will close it to testimony. Thank you, Mrs. Hansen. And also, Dean Perry, if you wouldn't mind signing in for the secretary. Thank you. Okay, with that, we have closed testimony, and we'll open it up to committee discussion and or action. Representative Dreyer.
Move due pass.
Representative Dreyer has moved due second. Pass on House Bill 1041, was seconded by Representative Rave. Representative Dreyer, would you like to address your motion? Okay. Further committee discussion, Representative Nygaard.
Yes, I'd address the motion and speak in favor of the motion. I believe that Ms. Hansen has done a wonderful job of incorporating the Administrative Procedures Act into this, which is a necessary component. I can see that there's been a great deal of work done on this bill, and it's a necessary step in moving the great state of South Dakota forward in this area of residency programs. Even though we don't have the money at this time to enlarge it and create more programs, I think it speaks, it moves in the right direction, and I encourage due pass.
Thank you, Representative Nygaard. Any further committee discussion on the motion? Seeing none, I will ask the secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Blake?
Aye.
Boomgarden?
Aye.
Curd?
Aye.
Dreyer?
Aye.
Ironclad?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Lucas?
Aye.
Mosier?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Ramkema?
Aye.
Vanderlinde?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Madam Chairman, there were yeas, 13.
Move consent.
The bill has passed, House Bill 1041, with a motion to move to consent by Representative Dreyer, seconded by Representative Curd. All those in favor of consent, voice vote, is a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, nay. Thank you. House Bill 1041 has moved to the consent calendar. And I would like to have Representative Curd address that, if any questions on the floor and in caucus. Thank you. Then we will move on to House Bill 1042. Do we have any proponents for House Bill 1042? And yes, we do. Come on forward, Ms. Hansen. House Bill 1042, an act to permit an extension to the required examination time period allowed for certain medical licensing examinations. And proponents may go ahead.
Again, Margaret Hansen, Executive Director of the South Dakota Board of Medical and Osteopathic Examiners. Thank you for hearing this bill. House Bill 1042 begins dealing with medical students. So now we're switching to those students who have not yet graduated from medical school, because that is when they begin taking their licensing exam. They start while they're in their medical school, and they finish typically when they're in their residency. So currently, South Dakota has what is referred to as the 337 rule, meaning they have to take all steps of their exam within within a 7-year period. In 2006, the medical school implemented a curriculum for the MD-PhD program, and this is designed to be completed in 7 years. The first 2 years and the final 2 years are the medical or the MD portion of that program, and the middle 3 years are the research or the PhD part of that program. So it is a dual degree program. This bill is an act to provide an extension to that 7-year period to allow them to get those steps within a 10-year period as opposed to a 7-year period. And the reasoning behind this is because the program is longer, although typically they do graduate within that 7 years. We wanted to have something that would have a cushion for the MD-PhD program to encourage those esteemed level of scholar to stay in the state and continue research. The whole concept is these are our leaders, these are our people who will be doing medical research, and we would like to retain them in the state, and therefore we would like them to be able to be licensed. So we did not want to have the 7-year be a barrier to the MD-PhD. At the same time, we wanted to keep in place what the legislature put as a mechanism that the required examination period for medical license is no greater than 7 years. And the premise of that is assuring that applicants for licensure are current in their medical knowledge at the time they receive their medical license. So given the fact that this is a longer program, we didn't want to present a barrier to them to get licensure, but we wanted to still ensure that they would have that same safety net of the medical knowledge at the time of their finishing their program. So that is the basis of this bill.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Hansen. We'll see if there's any other proponents to House Bill 1042. Do we have any other proponents of House Bill 1042? Good morning again.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Dean Krogman represents South Dakota State Medical Association. We are in support of this, and we have been very adamant about maintaining for practicing physicians the 3 times you're out in a 7-year period for practicing physicians. But we also have, through the Board of Regents, increased PhD programs throughout the state and in different areas. And this is one to try and develop if you look at the dollars that come in and the amount of general fund in higher ed, it's due to research. That we have had increases. Somebody else pays for that. And this will help us eventually with medical research in this state. So it's an important program. We understand the need to go 10 years only on the MD-PhDs. We are in support of this. Okay.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Could I, the Medical Association, if I could take 1 minute of your time, has a program that where we invite physicians to be volunteer lobbyists. And today we have Dr. Cohen with us from Yankton. He'll be here all week. And the reason for that is to provide a reference that has the knowledge. And necessarily, if you have any questions at all in the medical areas, that's why our volunteer physicians are here. So I just wanted to introduce Dr. Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Krogman, and welcome to Dr. Cohen. And if any of the committee members would like to visit with him throughout the week, feel free. I assume that you will be on the floor when appropriate and in the hallways. So thank you. Welcome. Do we have any other proponents for House Bill 1042? Seeing none, do we have any opponents to House Bill 1042? Opponents to House Bill 1042? Seeing none, we will not need a rebuttal, so we'll open it up to questions to our two proponents for House Bill 1042. Representative Lucas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Probably for Ms. Hansen then. Does the dual program with the PhD, does that have to also be at the university, or can that PhD be at another university?
Well, it's a dual degree of the MD-PhD, and other schools do have that, other medical institutions. We, of course, it's new in South Dakota, and that's why we're addressing this, but if they came from another state, I think we would encourage any MD-PhD as long as it was a dual degree program, and that's part of why it's written as a program approved by the board, so that the board has the knowledge of actual MD-PhD as opposed to having someone who has a PhD in another subject that would be outside of the medical field. So, thank you.
Representative Nygaard.
Thank you. Then, Ms. Hansen, that is what this is about, is allowing for extra time for the thesis and any research that's required to complete that joint program.
It's allowing them extra time to take their licensing exam because they do have more of that research component that's right in the middle of medical school. I believe that there's a very good chance that they will not need this because they do finish in 7 years and they foreseeably could do it, but we wanted to have some sort of buffer in if anything were to come up. And across the nation, the MD-PhD, the majority of states have 7 years to take a licensing exam. And of those that increase that time for an MD-PhD program, the number is 10 years. So that's why we chose that.
Follow
up. Yes, Representative Nygaard.
And so really the schedule, if everything's completed, is for 7 years. But the extra 3 years is just really to recognize that sometimes the thesis or whatever is not completed within the 7 years?
That is correct. The average time over all MD-PhD programs, the average finishing time is, I believe, I had it in my bill notes, it was at 8.8.
Okay. Thank you very
years.
Much.
So.
Thank you. Do we have other committee questions for our proponents? Seeing none, then we will close testimony on House Bill 1042. Thank you for our testifiers, and open it up to committee discussion and or action.
I move do pass.
Representative Nygaard has moved do pass on House Bill 1042. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Representative Jensen. Thank you. Would you like to address your motion, Representative Nygaard?
Not really. I just think the last question's pretty well summed it up. Just some extra time to make sure that they are able to complete their thesis and the rest of their research.
Thank you. Other committee discussion on the motion of due pass for House Bill 1042? Seeing none, then I will ask the Secretary to call the roll, please, for the vote.
Representatives Blake?
Aye.
Boomgarden?
Aye.
Curd?
Aye.
Dreyer?
Aye.
Ironclad?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Lucas?
Aye.
Mosher?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Romkema?
Aye.
Vanderlinde?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Madam Chair, 13.
We have had a unanimous affirmative vote for House Bill 1042.
Move consent.
Consent.
Second.
Motion has been moved by Representative Lucas and seconded by Representative Nygaard. Any discussion? All those in favor of House Bill 1042 moving to the consent calendar, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. We have moved House Bill 1042 to consent. It's been quite a morning so far. So we will move on to House Bill 1092 to regulate the practice of genetic counseling and to prohibit the practice of genetic counseling without a license. And before we move forward, I would like to assign House Bill 1042 to Representative Blake. Would you carry that if there's any questions on that? And if Representative Mosher could handle that in caucus.
Yes.
Thank you. With that, we'll move forward for proponents of House Bill 1092. And we have our favorite Mr. Speaker. Thank you. Move forward.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My testimony will not be profound since I'm not an expert in genetic counseling. I do bring before you, though, House Bill 1092, an act to regulate the practice of genetic counseling. At this point, there are no licensure requirements for genetic counseling, and that's what this bill will put into place. I am highly in favor of this piece of legislation, and I would ask for your favorable support, and I will deflect any questions to someone that actually knows something about genetic counseling. I will step aside and let further proponents testify.
Thank you, Representative Rave, for starting us on this journey for House Bill 1092. Do we have other proponents for House Bill 1092? Please come forward, and the pages may pass out your handouts. Thank you. If you would like to introduce yourself.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Speaker. My name is Quinn Stein. I am a genetic counselor. I'm from Sioux Falls and work at Sanford Health. I'm here today speaking in support of House Bill 1092, the act to require licensure for genetic counselors. Genetic counseling is a great job. It's what I do. It's a job I love. It's also one that's often tough to define in just a sentence or two, but when I have to, I usually say that what I do is take complicated genetic information and try to translate it into information that's easily understood by families. It's a very rewarding yet very challenging job. It's one that requires specialized skills and training. But as I just mentioned, it is rewarding, and every day is a little bit different. Some days my day consists of talking with a family with a newborn baby whose newborn screen may have identified a metabolic genetic condition, where my role is to explain the test that was done, how it's a genetic disorder, and what sorts of treatments may be available to it. Other days it's counseling families with strong histories of breast or ovarian cancer or colon cancer to try to help them determine if there may be a gene in their family which is causing the cancer, and to analyze that family history and to let them know when genetic testing may be appropriate or inappropriate for them. So every day is a little bit different. It is a profession that does require specialized skills and training, and that's why I am in support of this particular bill. I believe that not just anyone should be able to call themselves a genetic counselor, but that there should be some training that goes into that, and a lot of training. My training is a master's degree. I believe the bill itself does a good job of establishing board certification requirements as well as continuing education. Of course, in genetics, since things change day to day in every single magazine or journal article or newspaper, it's important to stay up to date, and I think those continuing education requirements are very important. Well, as I understand it, we like to save questions for the end, so for now I'll conclude my comments. I am available for questions later and just graciously ask for your support of House Bill 1092. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Stein, and it's great to meet one that's in the field. With that, we'll move forward with other proponents for House Bill 1092. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, committee members. My name is Dan Heineman. I'm a family physician. I practiced for 20 years in Canton, South Dakota, but 4 years ago I joined the full-time staff at Sanford Health. I'm the chief medical officer now of the Health Services Division, and I work in the Office of Public Policy working on health policy and legislative affairs. And I'm here to talk to you about the process and how this bill got to you here today. Probably about 2 years ago, Quinn came to my office and we started to talk about genetic counseling and where genetic counseling was going. If you recall your history, it was in the 1940s that two scientists by the name of Watson and Crick even identified that DNA was the material that set us apart in terms of that genetic framework or the fabric of life, if you will. Just 60 years later, we've now identify the entire human genome, and we're beginning to identify specific pieces of that genome called genes that can identify and be linked to certain diseases and disorders, ranging from coronary artery disease to some of the really rare and severe metabolic disorders that Quinn made mention of. And as we begin to understand this genome, the science of genetics is going to play an even bigger part in everyday medicine. Someday you may get your high blood pressure medicine based on your genetic profile in what we call pharmacogenetics. You undoubtedly know people whose one medicine works for that individual but doesn't seem to work for another individual. It may actually be in their genetic makeup that determines the differences in the way medications will work for people. We are identifying genes that can be linked to forms of cancer, and understanding that is important to families and patients as they begin to undertake questions about, do I need a mastectomy because my aunt and my mother and another relative had breast cancer? So the genetic information is going to be a big part of practice. And physicians are going to have to struggle to keep up with that, like they have to struggle to keep up with lots of information. So having specialists like Quinn available to a practicing physician is going to be very important. But even more important to the consumer who is getting that information, it's very important to know that that individual is giving that very sensitive, very important information is regulated. So this is really about protecting the public from people who've just put out their shingle on any street in any community in our state and to say that they're a genetic counselor. So Quinn came to me and we began this discussion and we said, what do we need to do to get this business regulated in South Dakota? There are only three in South Dakota right now, and at the best, we'll probably have a dozen scattered throughout the state at any one time. So there's never going to be enough of them to support their own board, if you will, and their own licensing entity. So we looked at the Board of Medical Examiners and the variety of specialists that the board regulates, PAs, dietitians, physical therapists, occupational therapists, EMTs, paramedics. The Board of Medical Examiner regulates a variety of medical specialists. So we felt that this would be the place to go. So we began our journey, if you will, for this bill with a discussion with the Board of Medical Examiners and pleaded our case, brought for them the information, and they agreed unanimously that, yes, the Board of Medical Examiners would be the most appropriate place for the regulation of genetic counselors. So then we began the research to draft this bill, looking at the genetic counselors organizations, what other states were doing. Utah was probably one of the leaders in this, and they've passed this. This bill is based a lot on Utah's experience, Tennessee's experience, and a variety of other states that have passed similar language. Right now there are 7 states that have passed language similar to this bill. In fact, Quinn did not tell you, but he's licensed in the state of Utah because Utah now allows for the licensure. He and his colleagues have applied for and have received a license in the state of Utah to be genetic counselors. We then took the research that we had along with some members of the Board of Medical Examiners, came up with an initial draft. We had that draft ready for last legislative session, but as we looked at and talked with all the stakeholders, the systems, the clinics, the providers, other people who had some interest in this, we found that there was still some things lacking in our bill, so we did not introduce it at last year's legislative session. Spent the summer in a more diligent working on our work product with the legal staff from the Board of Medical Examiners, the Board of Medical Examiners, members of the Board of Medical Examiners in terms of the physicians, and again, all the stakeholders, and worked even harder to get the bill that you have in front of you in the form that it is to bring before the legislature this session. And you'll hear from some of the other stakeholders this morning about that process and the things that they've done to make sure that all of their stakeholders are also behind this bill. So now you understand the process that we've gone through. Even though this is not necessarily being brought to you by the Board of Medical Examiners and the Department of Health, they have been intimately involved in this as we've gone along and have been key players in the drafting, making sure that everything that's in here with regards to the regulatory functions and the oversight are in this bill. Genetic counselors would never be able to afford, if you will, the luxury of having their own board. So again, I bring it back to you as to why we went to the Board of Medical Examiners. And I think you'll find that the legislation just speaks to the regulation and the licensure of genetic counselors. And I will be available for any further questions if you have them during your committee debate. Urge you to support this House bill as we move to a new era, if you will, in medical practice to make sure that these ancillary folks have the appropriate licensing and regulation. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Heineman, for your explanation, and I'm sure that there may be questions later. Other proponents of House Bill 1092. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Dave Hewitt. I'm the president of the South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations, and I'm pleased to appear before you today in support of this piece of legislation. It's a very important piece of legislation. I think Dr. Heineman has gone through a lot of the reasons of why it's here today. I would like to just take you through the bill very briefly. It's a bill of 15 sections, just so you get a sense of the flow of the bill, if you will. You know, the first part is definitions, important that it recognizes the Board of Medical and Osteopathic Examiners. It defines referral. It defines supervision. Just so that it's clear as to what the working relationship will be between the physicians, the PAs, the nurse practitioners, et cetera, and the certified genetic counselor. Section 2 tells us what a genetic counselor does. Section 3 really contains the process contained, which is contained in the practice of genetic counseling. Section 4 talks about protection, that you just can't be call yourself a genetic counselor without a license. I know Dr. Heineman said that we have currently have two or three, may have upwards of 12 in the state at some point in time. We don't want to have 112. We don't want to have 1,000 of these. We want to have people who are truly qualified, who have gone through the master's and PhD prepared programs, so that, in fact, the people who are giving this information really have the educational and training expertise to provide that information. Section 5 talks about qualifications related to that education and training. Section 6 just says that the department or that the board can refuse to grant a license for unprofessional conduct. Section 7 says that you need to, that a patient needs to have a referral from a physician, a nurse practitioner, PA, et cetera, to obtain the services from a genetic counselor. Section 8 says that, you know, that a genetic counselor can hold public seminars, can go out and tell the public about genetics and the science of genetics and what have you. It's a very interesting field, certainly a field that's changing as we speak, and to employ the talents of these individuals to understand that science, I think is very, very important. Section 9 just says that a temporary license can be granted for someone who's waiting to take who's had the training but is waiting to take the national certification test. Section 10 just says that someone with a temporary license has to work under the supervision of someone with a license. And 11 It just says that there's an annual renewal and CE and continuing education requirements. Section 12 talks about administrative authority of the board for the program. Section 13 allows licenses to be revoked for unprofessional conduct and other circumstances. Section 14 allows the board to reinstate that license if, in fact, that's found to be justified. And finally, Section 15 establishes an advisory council with one genetic counselor and three physicians that meet at least annually to review what's needed for this particular licensure law. This is an important bill. We are on the cusp of just new research in the whole area of genetics, and it's important that this state have this licensure law, and I would urge you to support it. Thank you. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hewitt. Further proponents for House Bill 1092.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Dean Krogman, I represent South Dakota State Medical Association, and we rise in support of this bill. We are concerned about supervision of allied health, and there are different rules that apply to the different licenses, but we are in support of it, and I, like your favorite speaker, would have to deflect any questions to somebody that understands genetic counselors. So thank you.
From one favorite to another, I guess.
He's a very wise man.
He is a very wise man. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Deb Fisher Clemens. I work with Avera Health, have for 31 years. I'm a registered nurse, and I'm here in support of this genetic counselor licensure legislation. As has been explained to you, there has been a group of us that have worked on this legislation for a couple of years, and it's been a pleasure to work as a part of the planning for this kind of piece of legislation. That group included all three health systems, including Rapid City and Avera and Sanford, as well as those other folks you've heard from today. We are in a new era where we see technological advances every day. And it is because of those technological advances that something as critically important as this kind of legislation for only a few people is so important, because we have to protect the consumer. We have to protect the public. We have to assure that when individuals are seeking information about something so critical in their life, that the best trained and most qualified, competent person is available to do that. And then also, as this legislation does, if there were problems, we have the ability to monitor and to control and do peer review process in that part. So this really defines a scope of practice that is truly necessary in this day and age. It establishes that the genetic counselor shall provide a report to the physician or nurse practitioner who has requested that the service be done. So there is a true connection, a communication, a linking to those families and to those providers who have asked that this service be provided. Anytime that we can provide protection to the public and provide a avenue for oversight, we truly have a positive impact on healthcare and consumer protection, and that's the most important thing for all of us in this state. With that, I ask for your support of House Bill 1092, and I would take any questions.
Further proponents of House Bill 1092. Do we have any other proponents of House Bill 1092? If not, we'll open it up to opponents of House Bill 1092. Opponents to House Bill 1092. Seeing no opponents, we will not need the rebuttal from our favorite speaker. And he may return to his seat feeling much relieved. With that, we will open it to committee questions of our proponents. Representative Kurd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Mr. Stein.
Representative Kurd, excuse me. Question for
Mr. Stein.
Yes, Mr. Stein.
Mr. Stein, thank you for coming in today to testify. It's been helpful to hear what you have to say about this issue. For those of us that are not engaged in the practice of continuing education with respect to our medical knowledge, perhaps you could comment to the committee on what 50 contact hours or 5 CEUs in a 3-year period actually means. We heard from you this morning that the field of genetics changes rapidly, sometimes almost on a minute-by-minute basis, and there are many committee members that might wonder if 5 CEUs in a 3-year period is actually enough to maintain your level of certification.
Madam Chair. With regard to the continuing education units, they are set by the ABGC, which is the American Board of Genetic Counseling. Continuing education units are required to maintain the certification, and what it amounts to, what traditional certification has amounted to, has been 25 CEUs in a 10-year period. Am I still on?
I think we're working with the mic here. If you'll just hold for just a second, Mr. Stein.
Is it your mic on?
Testing.
It would be brighter green.
It's bright green. It's on.
Okay. I'll just have you go ahead and talk louder.
So 25 CEUs or 250 contact hours over a 10-year period is technically what you need to maintain your certification. Actual CEUs are not available within our own hospital or within our own state. Usually they require travel to national conferences or taking online tests to be able to get that. So that is the amount that our board has set as a need. However, I do know in my day-to-day practice, every experience is a learning situation, and the actual CEUs itself are only a small part of the amount of continuing education we do during the year. So it is just that. It is just the minimum. Most of us go well above and beyond that.
Yes, first time, Kurt.
Just to clarify then, is it one contact hour equals 1 hour of actual instruction? That's the point I'm getting at. I'd like you to explain that so the rest of the committee understands if they do not.
Thank you. Sorry for not being clear. 0.1 CEU equals one contact hour. So 10 contact hours equals one CEU or one continuing education unit.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification, because it is a little bit different with the different disciplines. Thank you. Further questions from the committee for our proponents, Representative Nygaard?
Yes, if Mr. Stein would remain at the counter. Section 5 of the House Bill 1092 on line 21 sets the education level at the master's degree from a genetic counseling training program accredited by ABGC. So could you describe your master's degree in terms of how many graduate hours in and at what institution you came from and how many graduate hours of genetic training you received?
Madam, my particular degree, as I mentioned, is a typical one from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Most genetic counselors have an undergraduate degree or background in science. Mine happens to be in biology, chemistry, and religion. That, along with certain requirements, allow you to enter into graduate school. Graduate school itself is usually 2 years. Some programs may be a little bit longer. During graduate school, it's a combination of high-level science, communication skills, sort of classes and classes in psychosocial counseling, along with actual practicing, being a genetic counselor as an intern with somebody who is board certified. There are only about 27 or so accredited programs in the United States right now. Having an accredited program is important, and that's part of the ABGC's role as well.
Thank you.
Further committee questions? Representative Boomgarden.
For Mr. Stein, please, Madam Chair.
Please go ahead.
Going along with Section 5, there's subsection 2 where it talks about the successful completion of all these requirements must take place within 4 years. Is that from the starting of the first day of class? Or kind of explain to me, when does that time frame start for the person to complete the requirements for examination?
Madam Chair, that particular section, when the period not to exceed 4 years from initial examination, would be from the time somebody came into South Dakota and wanted to start practicing. We do not have a genetic counseling graduate program in South Dakota, so somebody would have to graduate from a program, come here with the intent of work, but in order to actually then work here, get a license, a temporary license, and then as part of that, go through the process of board certification.
Follow up. Representative Mosier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for Mr. Stein. Most of my questions have already been addressed by members of the committee, but just for my own curiosity, I guess, and we'll use Vermilion as a point of reference because that's where our medical school is located. Where would be the closest location to receive a master's degree from an accredited institution?
Madam Chair, the closest institutions, I'll kind of name some few depending on where you are in the state. The University of Minnesota has a program. I mentioned Wisconsin, which would, of course, be farther, and University of Colorado also has a program. Those are the closest institutions.
Thank you. Thank you.
Madam Chair. Representative Mosier, or excuse me, that was the last question. Representative Nygaard.
Well, thank you. I can see the mistake in regard to hair and age. I look so much like Mr. Mosier. Thank you. I have a question for Dr. Heineman. Dr. Heineman, I see that on page 4, again, I'm referring to Section 5, in sub A under education levels, we talk about a master's degree, which Mr. Stein just outlined for us what it is, or a doctoral degree from a medical genetics training program, again accredited by the same organization. And yet, in this brief of House Bill 1092, I see that it establishes that other licensed healthcare professionals who are practicing in their scope of practice may engage in the practice of genetic counseling without being licensed under this chapter. Am I to understand that a medical doctor, by virtue of his MD, is then meets the qualifications of Section A and B of Section 5?
Correct. Madam Chairman, I'm sorry. May I ask?
Follow-up?
That's correct.
Go ahead.
And we did not want to exclude a medical provider from being able to provide this information if he or she was competent and comfortable in doing that. Understanding that the scope of practice for a physician practitioner in South Dakota is very wide, and we do have physicians who have this capacity to provide this kind of service, and we did not want to exclude anybody from being able to provide that type of information to their patients.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. Is this a new specialty in practice of medicine? When I say a specialty, I mean such as dermatology, which requires board certification. Are we proceeding in a direction of having genetic counseling be a new specialty?
There are medical geneticists, and there already are specialties that surround medical genetics. I'll give you an example of a specialty that's going to have medical genetics as an integral part of its specialty. The specialty of maternal fetal medicine, perinatology is what you may send. Many of the new perinatologists or maternal fetal medicine specialists who will be coming online in practice in the next few years are doing an additional year of training in genetics. So they will be a maternal fetal medicine specialist with additional training in genetics, specifically aimed at the identification of congenital anomalies and metabolic disorders that surround a pregnancy. Who knows what will develop with regards to medical genetics as we gain a better understanding of the human genome. There may be surgical genetics, oncological genetics. We know that in many of our oncology or cancer practices, we need to have access to genetic counseling because that's part of good cancer care. So I don't know where this will all lead us into the future, but there are plans to develop a more specialized medicine along with in the field of genetics.
Follow up, Madam Chair. Dr. Heineman, in Section 7, a quite large paragraph that requires that there be a referral before you can see a licensed genetic counselor. Now, you've just finished stating that this is not a board-certified specialty, and so please explain to me and possibly to the rest of the board, why is it then that you have to have a referral before you seek out a genetic counselor?
In our work group throughout the last couple of years, with the physicians from the Board of Medical Examiners, with the various members, we really felt that it was important to maintain that attachment, if you will, to the medical care that the patient was receiving. That this is important information, but it needs to be given in the context of a medical dialogue or a medical encounter, a medical relationship, so that we know that when this information is given to the patient through the genetic counselor, that there's a connection to a medical provider. At this point in time, we felt that that was what we needed because this is a new specialty, if you will, in South Dakota. We need to understand how that practice is going to develop, and maybe in the future that referral relationship can be changed or severed or whatever. But at this point in time, we felt it was very important to maintain that medical relationship with the genetic counselor for that patient's sake.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have other committee questions? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Heineman, how do you propose to limit the number of genetic counselors in South Dakota?
Madam Chair, I don't know that we have any proposal to limit we would limit the number of licensed genetic counselors through this legislation. And we would hope that with this legislation, then the only genetic counselors that would be providing services to the citizens of the state of South Dakota would in fact be licensed and regulated by the Board of Medical Examiners. So it's through this legislation that we would limit. Now, we would hope that lots of licensed genetic counselors would want to practice in South Dakota, but the realities are I don't know that we'll ever have the patient base or the need for like huge numbers of them. So, I mean, I think an optimistic number may be a dozen. And that's why we did what we did with regards to tying this to the Board of Medical Examiners.
Thank you. Follow up?
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Heineman, is there any problem that you're aware of regarding health insurance coverage of this, of genetic counseling? You know, is it viewed as experimental or?
Madam Chair, health insurance coverage comes up when we discuss this, and obviously this bill doesn't mandate any coverage, doesn't mandate insurance plans to do anything. There are insurance plans that pay for genetic counseling. The biggest hurdle to get over to having those discussions with health insurance plans is licensure. Before they'll even begin the discussions about whether or not they'll provide payment for those services, the first question is the genetic counselor licensed? This gets us through that first hurdle. There's good research to show that health insurance plans actually see a savings in costs and when there's appropriate genetic counseling tied to the testing. Genetic testing is very expensive. It's done in limited labs. It's very expensive. It's very easy for somebody to order a battery of genetic tests, not knowing which tests they should be ordering. Another example would be a woman who is has a high risk of breast cancer in her family. She's now contemplating a prophylactic bilateral mastectomy. With appropriate genetic counseling and appropriate understanding of her actual risk, she may make better choices. The insurance company then gets better care for their insured and for the individual. And the insurance company actually says that in the long run, that may actually save me money. And as we get into, like I said, pharmacogenetics and the other parts of genetic medicine, we may see that insurance companies say, we're not going to provide that service until you have appropriate counseling and your risk, you understand your risk, and we understand where we need to go with this. So it's a long answer to your question, but we've had conversations with health plans. They know where we are with this, and they're comfortable with where we're going with this. And again, this bill has no mandates for any coverage within it.
Thank you, Dr. Hyman.
Further committee questions on Representative Vanderlinde.
This is a question. Oh, I'm sorry. This is for a question for Mr. Hewitt, I believe. I'm very impressed with this bill. It looks like you've covered a lot of ground, and it shows the kind of forward thinking that we want in South Dakota. Having said that, I have just one question, and that would be, who develops the criteria for the Board of Medical Examiners to examine the genetic counseling? Where do you get that criteria? And who teaches the Board of Medical Examiners that criteria?
Madam Chair, probably a better question for the people that were up just before me, but those are nationally established standards and criteria that are then transferred to the board for it, and it really is the national exam that establishes the criteria. I'm going to make sure I'm correct on that.
Please.
This is Dan Heineman again. If you recall in the bill, it has an advisory group that's attached to the Board of Medical Examiners. That is in existence for PAs and many of the other specialized areas that the board governs. They use those advisory committees to then counsel the board on what to look for, how to govern in terms of those standards. And as Mr. Hewitt has said, those standards come down from the national organizations. But they'll be brought to the Board of Medical Examiners through that advisory board or that advisory committee. That's language that's in many of the other practice acts that are germane to the Board of Medical Examiners, and that's how they get that kind of information to the board as well as through the board's staff.
Thank you. That answered my question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have a question regarding maybe the scope of practice, maybe Mr. Stein. It appears that a large part of your scope of practice would be with management of genetic disorders. Do you do the inverse of that to counsel individuals and or families on maybe designer babies or anything along that line?
Madam Chair, the easy answer to that question is no. It's not anything close to what we do.
Representative Lucas, follow-up? Okay, thank you. Representative Kurd, and then...
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have another question for Dr. Heineman, if he could return.
This really is not musical chair.
I understand. It's quite all right.
Thank you for making the trip today. I appreciate your testimony thus far. Clearly, the bill has lots of effort and thought put into it by many different parties, and I applaud the effort. The question I have for you is, you've stated this morning, and in the bill, it requires referral by a qualified physician, licensed nurse practitioner, or a physician assistant. for a genetic counseling event to take place. It occurs to me that in Section 5, Subsection 2, the examination requirements are two strikes and you're out. We've heard this morning already that physicians are allowed to take an examination three times before their license is not allowed to be granted by the state of South Dakota. And it occurs to me that we are requiring in this bill, as it stands currently, a higher intra-professional standard for the genetic counselor than the person that's referring a patient for that service. And I wonder if for consistency, perhaps some thought should be changing that to a three strikes and you're out for a licensed genetic counselor in the state, like your comments.
Madam Chair, we discussed that, and it ranged from one strike and you were out to several. We felt in looking at what other states were doing, and based on, like I said, we based a lot of this on Utah and Tennessee, who've passed similar legislation, but they had two strikes. We felt that that was appropriate, given the gravity of this specialty. I understand where your comments about the physician. This is about licensing. The three strikes and you're out is really about finishing those pre-licensing tests, but they're tied. They're very similar. We came down on the side of two. I'm not saying it couldn't be changed to three, but through our discussions with the board, they felt that was appropriate. Quinn and his and our group of counselors and the people who got together decided on two. And again, it's new. We're plowing new ground here, so this is basically a first attempt at coming up with legislation like that. We felt two was appropriate.
Follow up.
Yes.
Madam Chair, same question to Mr. Stein. He looks like he's burgeoning to tell us more information there.
Madam Chair. Thank you. The easy answer is that the ABGC, so the National Accrediting Agency, actually says you only get two chances. And so that's why we followed that. You can, of course, go back and try to reapply through them and collecting more logbook cases and kind of getting retrained, so to speak. But the actual ABGC says you get two chances.
That's why this is a team effort.
Thank you. Representative Nygaard?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have a question for Dean Krogman from the South Dakota Medical Association.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Krogman.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Krogman, have there been any problems that you're aware of with unlicensed? Are there charlatans out there who have been, since there is no requirement for licensing, setting up shop and because they have a little bit of knowledge and out there counseling people on genetics?
Madam Chair, to our knowledge, no. Dr. Heineman, as he said, has been working on this for the past 2 years, and we first became aware of it because of the genetic counselors at Sanford. So, no.
Follow-up, Madam Chair? I was just going to point out that I had an email from someone in Sioux Falls who suggested that there are some of those in South Dakota. At least, certainly it's hearsay for me, but suggesting that there were some people practicing who are not board certified.
Okay. We are not aware of that. If that is the case, this bill will certainly help.
Right, correct.
Madam Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
Krogman.
I know that he didn't testify, but I've checked the log, and he has signed in as a proponent on both the past bill and the first bill and 1092. I have a question regarding the curriculum of the medical degree at USD that I could ask Dean Perry if he had a moment to come back.
And that's pertinent to this bill, Representative Nygaard?
Yes, I believe it is, because we're allowing medical doctors to act as if they're licensed and certified under this and make referrals.
Okay, thank you. For a specific question only, Dean Perry?
Good morning again, Madam Chair. Rod Perry, Dean, Sanford School of Medicine.
Thank you, Dean. Dean, my question is this. You've heard prior testimony from a master's graduate from the University of Wisconsin, Wyoming. I'm not sure they know about genetics in Wyoming, but at any rate. medical degree program, how much genetics, how many graduate hours are taught in the medical field?
You're asking me a question that I would not know offhand, but I do know that we do have genetics interspersed throughout our curriculum. It would include both the clinical years, for example, when you're on pediatrics or obstetrics, we would expect the students to be interacting with the physicians and the patients at that time related to genetics. And of course, we also provide in the basic science years, the first 2 years, some foundation for that component. So the exact hours, I can't tell you because they occur in different scenarios.
Madam Chair, just one follow-up. Then, Dean, is it safe to say that you would be comfortable with medical doctors being at the level of this Section 5, either a master's degree, which would be the minimum one, compared to the doctoral degree?
I think we're really talking about two different scenarios. I'm very comfortable with the physician providing genetic information in his area of expertise. If I can use myself as an example, I'm a lung specialist, and for years I have provided care for children with cystic fibrosis. And because of my special knowledge in that very isolated area of disease, I think I bring much more to the table as a physician and feel that that's beneficial. I surely do not have the breadth of knowledge, nor do I think most physicians have the breadth of knowledge as we would have by a professional such as Mr. Stein.
Thank you very much for your answers.
Thank you, Dr. Perry. Further committee questions? I do have a question for Dr. Heineman. Dr. Heineman, this is basically a general question, but as I listen and as I know the medical field from my perspective, it appears to me that genetics will be a very quickly expanding field with the knowledge base that we have. How would you anticipate keeping up to have enough licensed geneticists in the state?
Are you, Madam Chair, are you speaking of medical geneticists or genetic counselors?
The genetic counselors.
I think the demand will help us. And I think what's going to drive some of that is the understanding and knowledge needed to practice medicine. It's like an orthopedic surgeon like Dr. Kurd, as he expanded his practice with what he does in hand surgery, now we have specialist in physical therapy related to hand surgery in South Dakota that we didn't have, say, 20 years ago. Same goes for other specialties that we've developed, dietetics, for instance. As we become more adept at prescribing diets, lifestyle changes, the need for dietitians has increased. I think as medical practice expands and the need for those special providers expands, that will drive the market, if you will, to bring more genetic counselors in, just like it's brought in other specialized skills within some of the recognized practitioners that we have in the state of South Dakota. So I think the market, the need will generate. Obviously, there are, like Quinn said, 27 programs providing that degree. The schools are gearing up for the need to have those kinds of specialists. So I think, now, the other thing I will also say, this bill will help us, and as Representative Jensen alluded to, we need to get payment for these services as well. And as insurance companies recognize the importance, payment for these services will also help drive those providers to come into the state. And that's another reason why we need to have regulations in place as they come into the state, so we're protecting the public and their consumers.
Thank you. Any further committee questions before we close testimony? With that, then, we will close testimony, and I would like to take just a second to thank those of you that were our proponents in taking a very complex issue and breaking it into not only the day-to-day but the process as well as the bill itself, and also to know that there's been many stakeholders that have worked together. So I think as a committee chair, I would like to thank you for that. And we will close testimony and open it up to committee discussion and or action. Representative Rabe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move due pass on House Bill 1092.
We have had a motion do pass from Representative Rave on House Bill 1092 with a second from Representative Dreyer. Would you like to address your motion, Representative Rave?
Not to prolong things, just to echo your comments. It is a very complex issue, and I very much appreciate you folks basically making my floor speech for me. It is an area that we've been lacking in licensure, and it's an area that's going to expand greatly over the next several years. So I think we're in on the ground floor and have a good piece of legislation to move forward with. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ray. Further committee discussion on the motion do pass of House Bill 1092. Representative Kurd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My only comment is to address directly the questions Representative Nygaard was asking about Section 4, and I would just like to clarify for the committee that many times in the course of a physician's practice, they are asked questions about, say, their child born without a finger or perhaps born with a change in their hip, and their first question is usually, is this inherited? My reading of Section 4 is that it's purposely broad to allow those of us that take care of those kind of patients to interact with the family on a timely basis and not to say, I can't answer that question on the grounds that I may be violating the Genetic Counseling Act. So I think it's purposely broad to allow those of us that have training in that area of expertise to address those questions to the family when it's timely and pertinent, and to allow them then further to engage in the process with a genetic counselor. And I don't think it's to hang my shingle out as a genetic counselor, and I would not encourage the committee to keep that as an obstacle from voting for the bill.
Thank you, Representative Kurd, for that explanation. Further committee discussion on House Bill 1092? Seeing none, then I will ask the Secretary to call the vote.
Representatives Blake?
Aye.
Bloomgarden?
Aye.
Kurd?
Aye.
Dreyer?
Aye.
Ironclad?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Lucas?
Aye.
Mosher?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Ralkema?
Aye.
Vanderlinde?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Madam Chair, 13.
House Bill 1092 has passed unanimously and will go to the floor with the due pass recommendation. With that, do we have any other committee questions or discussion this morning? I would like to note that in the back of those of you that have the paper books, we did put the joint rules for committee motions, et cetera. So those of you that are new may have that. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Kurd has moved to adjourn. Do we have a second? Second by Representative Dreyer. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We will see you Thursday at 07:45.